Good evening. For WBAI News in New York, I'm Linda Perry with some of the news for Tuesday, January 10th, 2017. Jeff Sessions, Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III, Donald Trump's pick for U.S. Attorney General, is set to replace U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch. Sessions, U.S. Senator from Alabama since 1997, before that, Alabama Attorney General, and before that, U.S. Attorney appointed by Ronald Reagan. He was not confirmed for a federal judgeship back in 1985 because of a voter fraud case where he prosecuted civil rights leaders, all of them acquitted. The ACLU points to his troubling record on immigration. He led the Senate against immigration reform. He said almost no one coming from the Dominican Republic coming to the U.S. is coming here because they have a provable skill that would benefit us. Jeff Sessions argued in favor of using religion as a reason to ban immigrants from entering the U.S. He said, if you have two people, why not choose the one most harmonious with our values? He introduced legislation that let local police enforce federal immigration law, a practice that led to racial profiling and illegal detention. At the beginning of the hearing, California Senator Dianne Feinstein on the House Judiciary Committee, a Democrat from California, made the point that despite Sessions' conservative views, as Attorney General, he must differentiate between partisan views and do the work of defending the law of the land, that he needs to disconnect from the president in upholding the Constitution.
As Attorney General, his job will not be to advocate for his beliefs. Rather, the job of the Attorney General is to enforce federal law. Even if he voted against the law, even if he spoke against it before it passed, even if he disagrees with the precedent saying that the law is constitutional, most importantly, his job will be to enforce federal law equally for all Americans. And this job requires service to the people and the law, not to the president. The president-elect said to his opponent during a debate, and I quote, "If I win, I'm going to instruct my attorney general to get a special prosecutor to look at your situation," end quote. Mr. Chairman, that's not what an attorney general does. An attorney general does not investigate or prosecute at the direction of the president. Nor do attorneys generals wear two hats, one as the president's lawyer and one as the president's as the people's lawyer. That model has failed. Rather, the attorney general must put aside loyalty to the president. He must ensure that the law and the Constitution come first and foremost, period.
And Feinstein, citing a letter by more than 1,400 law professors against the confirmation of Jeff Sessions, said people across the country are concerned whether they can rely on the Department of Justice to protect their rights and freedoms.
There have been sit-ins, protests, and writings, and the committee has received letters of opposition from 400 different civil rights organizations, 1,400 law professors, 1,000 law students, a broad task force of organizations that oppose domestic violence, 70 reproductive health organizations, and many, many others. All these letters express deep anxiety about the direction of this country and whether this nominee will enforce the law fairly.
Already, Ty with Code Pink had been ejected from the hearing dressed as a Klan member, as had Code Pink's leader, Medea Benjamin, shouting evil at Sessions.
I'm honored to appear before you today. I thank you for the opportunity.
As Sessions began delivering his opening statement, Revolutionary Communist Party leader with Refused Fascism, Carl Dix, began shouting at Jeff Sessions.
I
also want to thank my dear friends. No Trump! No KKK, no fascist USA. Sessions is a racist, illegitimate, just like the whole fucking fascist regime prevented from ruling. People should flood into the streets of January 14th.
Let me stand up.
January 14th and stay in the streets.
Stop the Trump regime before you kill.
Mr. Chairman.
Sansara Taylor is writer for Revolutionary Newspaper. She's co-initiator of RefuseFascism.org, and she's in Washington, D.C.
Carl Dix and a bunch of volunteers from RefuseFascism.org from around the country are down here on the ground in D.C., and this morning was the hearing to confirm Jeff Sessions as the new attorney general. This is a white supremacist sympathizer, a man who said that grabbing a woman by the genitals is not a crime. This just further underscores the complete illegitimacy of the Trump-Pence regime. And so Carl Dix, who is down here to organize people to bring D.C. to a halt, bring millions into the streets to stop the Trump-Pence fascist regime before it starts, was in the hearing. As Jeff Sessions began to make his opening comments, Carl Dix could be seen on CNN and MSNBC and all the media jumping up and saying, no Trump, no KKK, no fascist USA, and calling on people. Millions need to flood into the streets. We need to prevent this regime from taking power. He was dragged out in handcuffs, but he chanted the whole way.
So what is happening with him now as we speak in the afternoon?
Well, we're waiting to see if we can get him out. We haven't heard for sure what his status is, what he's being charged with. We have lawyers down there, and we are demanding his immediate release. The fact that he is in custody, and a man who said the only problem with the KKK is that some of them smoke pot, is sitting there about to be put in charge of the whole law enforcement and Justice Department, this is completely illegitimate.
Taylor says even though they are being normalized, Trump and Pence are fascists.
They've assembled a cabinet of white supremacists, neo-Nazis, torturers, and theocrats, and they need to be stopped. Everybody knows this is the American Hitler. I mean, it's plain as day. It's being normalized. But people, if you open your eyes, this is what it is. And the time to stop fascism is before they come to power. So we're calling on people to flood into D.C., to come down here this Saturday, January 14th. There's buses coming from New York at RefuseFascism.org to get down here to take to the streets wherever you are. We have 10 days to stop this fascist regime from taking power. So we're demanding Carl Dix's release. I know when he gets out, he'll be right back on the street with us, organizing and mobilizing for this down in the streets of D.C., and we're calling on people to act across this country.
And, you know, Sansara, it wasn't just Carl and those that he was with who were protesting. There were plenty of others who were protesting throughout the morning of testimony, and there was smirking by the senators and by Sessions as these protesters interrupt the hearing.
Yeah, I think this disregard, it's showing a blatant disregard for the will of the people and for the fundamental rights of the people. And it's true, there were people protesting for immigrant rights. This man, Sessions, has just a brutal, cutthroat, heartless approach towards immigrants. He has a vicious misogyny that he's championed, just like Trump and Pence. He's got the whole history of white supremacy, an old, unreconstructed, good old boy, Southern racist. And, you know, to have such disdain for the courageous and self-sacrificing voices of people who stand up and have the courage to speak and defy this power, to have that kind of disdain and contempt, it just reveals you cannot allow these people to take the reins of power. They have no regard for the basic fundamental rights of the people, for speech, for the will of the people, for the right to protest. I mean, Trump himself said he wants to strip the citizenship from people who exercise constitutionally protected speech like flag burning. This is of a piece with that smirking. You know, these are not normal times, and it really demands that people step out of their routine and stand up and join this protest and not expect somebody in power to listen, but to come forward in such determination and numbers that they're forced to respond, whether they like what we say or not, whether they want to hear it or not. We have to flood the streets. Humanity, in the name of humanity, we have to stop this fascist regime. And that's what Carl Dix was doing.
So, Sansara, this Thursday and Friday, there are going to be some walkouts. Can you tell us?
Yes. January 12th and 13th are National Student Days of walking out, striking, doing teach-ins. They're Student Days of Action, and the hashtag is Wake Up, Walk Out, Stop Trump Pence Before They Come to Power. The young people, they need to stand up and take, you know, history into their hands. Then on Saturday, January 14th, we're converging in McPherson Square in D.C., and we're going to have a night march. We're converging at 4 p.m., and we're going to be marching into the evening, night after night, day after day, growing from hundreds to thousands and from thousands to millions so that we reach a crescendo before the inauguration. And we are fighting to prevent this regime from taking power and consolidating a fascist America. So we call on people to go to refusefascism.org, join with the student walkouts on the 12th and 13th, get on the bus from New York down to D.C. on January 14th, and stay in D.C. And if you can't make it to D.C., go into the streets in New York or wherever you are and stay in the streets. Refuse to leave. Don't go back to normal. Bring this country to a halt. We refuse to accept a fascist America. Thank you so much. Sansara Taylor with RefuseFascism.org.
If the wall, it goes up and the country comes down, and it's too tall to get in, too late to get out, and the beaches have barbed wire across every shore, would you lay down your gun? Then you won't need it no more. If the wall, it goes up with the thing ever long after we're gone, as a tombstone for freedom in a world that went wrong, a reminder of just how far we haven't come.
Immigration, a central issue in the U.S. today. Jeff Sessions voted against three immigration bills and voted against the DREAM Act, Republican Senator Lindsey Graham.
Immigration. You've said that the executive order of President Obama you believe is unconstitutional, the DACA law. You still have that position?
I did, for a number of reasons.
But no, I'm not, I mean,
right.
I agree with you. Now, we got 800,000 people have come out of the shadows that have been signed up. Will you advise the next president, President Trump, to repeal that executive order?
There will be a decision that needs to be studied and that he would need to agree to, but it's an executive order, really a memorandum of the Department of Homeland Security. It would certainly be constitutional, I believe, to end that order. And I would, the Department of Justice, I think, could have no objection to a decision to abandon that order, because it is very questionable, in my opinion, constitutionally.
Once we repeal it, and I agree that I believe it is an overreach, what do we do with the 800,000 kids who've come out of the shadows?
Sessions says we've been placed in a bad situation, that he would try to be supportive. Senator Durbin, Democrat from Illinois, returned to this question.
Senator Graham asked this question, and I listened to your answer, when he asked you what would happen to those 800,000 currently protected by President Obama's executive order known as DACA, who cannot be deported for 2 years, it's renewable, and can work for 2 years, and you said, let Congress pass a comprehensive immigration reform bill. You opposed the only bipartisan effort that we've had on the Senate floor in modern memory. And what's going to happen to those 800,000 if you revoke that order and they are subject to deportation tomorrow? What is going to happen to them? What is the humane legal answer to that?
Well, the first thing I would say is that my response to Senator Graham dealt with whose responsibility this is. I had a responsibility as a member of this body to express my view and vote as I believe was correct on dealing with issues of immigration. That's not the Attorney General's role. The Attorney General's role is to enforce the law. And as you know, Senator Durbin, we're not able financially or any other way to seek out and remove everybody that's in the country illegally. President Trump has indicated that criminal aliens, like President Obama indicated, certainly are the top group of people. And so I would think that the best thing for us to do, and I would urge colleagues that we understand this, let's fix this system. And then we can work together after this lawlessness has been ended, and then we can ask the American people and enter into a dialogue about how to compassionately treat people who've been here a long time.
Durbin visibly dissatisfied with Sessions' answer.
That does not answer the question about 800,000 who would be left in the lurch, whose lives would be ruined while you're waiting on Congress for a bill that you opposed?
Well, I thought it did answer it pretty closely to what you ask, and I understand your concerns.
Another area the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU flagged is about a Sessions Justice Department in the area of police reform. I spoke with Faiza Patel. She's co-director of the Liberty and National Security Program at the Brennan Center for Justice.
So my question to you is, what do you think a Justice Department will look like under Jeff Sessions in terms of police reform? Now, we've had work done here in New York with the Floyd versus City of New York lawsuit, and you know, there's been some consent decrees that have been issued and remedies are being worked on. And there's also been some work done in Ferguson and Baltimore and other places,
right,
to try to stem the abuse of power. What do you think is going to happen going forward with someone like Jeff Sessions as Attorney General?
I think the big concerns with the Sessions Justice Department is that they won't be nearly as active as the Justice Department has been over the last administration in addressing issues of police abuse. You know, you mentioned the Floyd case. In that case, the Justice Department actually filed a statement of interest in the case, not on the merits, but really talking about the kinds of remedies that the court could impose on the police department. And that was obviously very helpful both to the plaintiffs in the case, but also to the court itself, because it could be kind of expansive in fashioning remedies. You mentioned Ferguson and Baltimore, and what we've seen, of course, over the last few years is that as issues around police brutality become more and more salient to the general public, that the Justice Department has taken the initiative in launching investigations and in, you know, recommending reforms. And that puts a great deal of pressure on police departments in order to come to the table and to actually implement changes that will curtail the abuse of police power.
Skeptical of any kind of oversight, skeptical of the government's role in providing oversight for this.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, one of the things we're going to see is a less active Justice Department on these issues, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because it is relatively discretionary in the Justice Department as to which, you know, cases it investigates and which ones it doesn't. And so if you have an attorney general who, you know, doesn't think that it's the federal government's role to be ensuring that police departments are actually following constitutional standards, then obviously one would expect to see a much less active Justice Department on these issues.
Faiza Patel, co-director of the Liberty and National Security Program at the Brennan Center for Justice. And this is the news on WBAI in New York. This evening, President Barack Obama in Chicago delivers his farewell address. Immigrants are gathering to watch the farewell speech to raise the call for Obama to pardon immigrants with status who have minor criminal records. And they will discuss how the president could cement a pro-immigrant legacy with his few remaining days. Watch President Obama this evening at 9 p.m. on C-SPAN or whitehouse.gov. In local news, as New Yorkers are well aware, there's a mess on Fifth Avenue. Today, the New York City Council's Committee on Economic Development, led by Chair Dan Garodnick, opened up hearings on the economic impact of increased security for the president-elect upon local businesses and the city as a whole.
As of today, informal estimates indicate that more than 40 million may have been lost.
Tom Cusick of the Fifth Avenue BID paints a picture of congestion for everyday New Yorkers and tourists and a costly money-losing drain because of the Trump presidency.
Let me give you some practical examples of how difficult things have been. The entrances to retail stores on the west side of Fifth Avenue between 56th and 57th are literally inaccessible from time to time for three reasons. First, pedestrian traffic is mostly prohibited on the east side of Fifth Avenue and is directed to the west side. Second, about 10 to 12 TV cameras set up on the west side are omnipresent while the president-elect is in town. And third, tourists and passersby stop near the TV cameras to take their own photos, mostly with cell phones raised above their heads. While this inaccessibility is now constant, variations of lesser crowds still keep shoppers away from these stores. Another example involves stores on the northeast and the southeast corners of 56th Street and 5th Avenue, where there's a security checkpoint. As pedestrians on the south side are asked about their destination, pedestrian traffic moving north is severely impeded.
Manhattan Borough President Gail Brewer says the situation on 5th Avenue is really messed up. In November, following the election, revenues were down an average of 30% despite a rebound. Additional declines over the last few weeks due to a second command post and barricades along the block, and only one lane open to traffic.
The 5th Avenue businesses of Trump Tower include iconic New York gems such as Tiffany's, Berghoff Goodman's, American flagship stores of international companies such as Bulgari and Chanel. These stores lure national and international tourists and directly provide thousands of good jobs, while indirectly they support many times that number of jobs. We have heard the concerns of these businesses that customers are staying away, and anecdotally, some have reported comparatively better holiday sales at some New Jersey mall branches. A horrible idea. Better at the New Jersey mall branches than at their flagship Fifth Avenue stores this year.
Bar owner Derek Walsh wonders why there wasn't a plan in place. He's not on Fifth Avenue, but on a side street near Trump Tower.
Like, I think personally about next week, the inauguration, there's protests. Like, as simple thing as that. Do I put extra staff working that day, or do I close the doors because the street may get closed down? There's very little communication. I wish there was more.
We'll be broadcasting more from this important hearing affecting New York City businesses and the lives of New Yorkers in the coming days. And this is the news over WBAI in New York. In other city news, the Gotham Gazette's Ben Max updates us on events Governor Cuomo is holding around the state this week.
The big story this week in New York politics is Governor Andrew Cuomo's State of the State tour, a three-day, six-stop junket on which Cuomo is establishing his agenda for 2017 while also looking back to tout his administration's accomplishments over the last several years. Featuring prominently in the latter is Cuomo's infrastructure spending. The governor has dedicated many billions of dollars to the new Tappan Zee Bridge, airport reconstruction in New York City and elsewhere, as well as a new Penn Station and other investments. Especially over the past year, Cuomo has begun to make sure that he'll be known as a builder, attempting to leave a physical legacy in New York, and making sure that he can take action that often doesn't need legislative approval other than through the budget appropriations. Cuomo is on his State of the State tour in a departure from tradition where for over 90 years, governors have delivered one State of the State message to the legislature in Albany. Cuomo is feuding with legislators after a pay raise commission fell apart late last year, and negotiations for a special session in Albany also did not materialize. Along with attempting to be known as a builder, Cuomo is also mixing in a variety of other proposals, some of them regional and some of them for the entire state. One of those is his new plan to offer tuition-free public college in New York at CUNY and SUNY schools to all lower and middle-income families earning up to $125,000 a year. Cuomo announced the plan last week at a rally with Vermont Senator and former presidential candidate Bernie Sanders. It's part of Cuomo's reimagining himself as a progressive leader in New York and part of the governor's leftward lurch over the last year and a half or 2 years. The governor is still painting himself as a careful fiscal moderate, but also as a progressive champion who's looking out for those forgotten by an economy that in some ways has been booming, but has created a lot of anxiety, uncertainty, and insecurity for many people, both in New York and across the nation. There are also questions as Cuomo goes on his tour about whether he has begun to eye not only his own re-election in 2018 as governor, but a potential presidential run in 2020, now that the country is set to inaugurate Donald Trump, a Republican, as president. A major theme of Cuomo's first address, which took place in New York City, seemed to indicate he had an eye on presidential politics. He spoke directly to middle-class anger and said that some of his proposals, a middle-class economic stimulus program, including tuition-free college, as well as an expansion of a child care tax credit, would alleviate some of the middle-class anxiety that was shown in the presidential election. Cuomo said that looking out for middle-class economics and being a progressive capital of the world were not necessarily oppositional missions. The governor is clearly painting himself as a big tent Democrat as he tours the state and approaches the 2017 year in Albany. Many people are waiting to see what the budget numbers look like that are attached to those policy proposals as the governor goes back to negotiate a new state budget with the state legislature. A new state budget is due by April 1st. Mayor Bill de Blasio, who was in attendance for Cuomo's first speech, said he liked a lot of the ideas, but that he is also waiting to see budget numbers. Last year, Cuomo attempted to shift hundreds of millions of dollars in costs to New York City for CUNY and Medicaid, which de Blasio and his allies in Albany, specifically Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie of the Bronx, were able to push back. The governor's executive budget proposal is due to the state legislature by January 17th. We'll be watching for those numbers, as will many across the state and here in the city. For WBAI, this is Ben Max of Gotham Gazette.
And that's the WBAI Evening News for Tuesday, January 10th, 2017. The news was produced with Ben Max of Gotham Gazette, Reggie Johnson, and on this celebration of the birthday of WBAI, a special thanks to WBAI's station manager, Bertold Reimers, who's made the return of the WBAI News at 6 p.m. possible. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.